Chapter 9. The Terror of Ferns.
If I had wanted to do house calls, Sidney Grice grumbled as he stretched to step over a damp patch, I would have become a plumber.
I am not sure Lucy could get up our steps, I told him.
What then? He inquired. Am I to have them removed and my house lowered?
He buttoned his coat collar.
And now it is raining.
I had not brought my umbrella, as my guardian had what he described as a rational fear of anything that flapped. He gave me his arm, and I skipped out of our cab onto the curb. It is not too heavy. I held out my hand, palm upwards.
All rain is too heavy, he decreed. If it were not, it would not fall from the clouds.
Perhaps it will clear the air.
London air is never clear, nor is it meant to be.
I looked about me. Grosvenor Square was one of the most exclusive developments in Mayfair, one of the most expensive areas of London, and therefore the world. It was built round a large gated garden, and was unusual in that most of the houses were individually constructed, rather than the more conventional uniform terraces. It was no less imposing for that, though, and the property we faced on the north side was a splendid four-story Regency villa, with high-arched windows. Carved into the white stone façade, and highlighted in ebony to match the front door, was the name Amber House. Mr. G. tapped the steps with his cane.
She managed to ascend these.
There are only two, and we have six, I pointed out. I should have thought you would have observed that. And before he could retaliate, I added, At least this gets you out of the house.
I do not wish to be got out of my house. If I did, I should never have gone into it.
He forced the wide brim of his soft felt hat down over his eyes.
I trust you have not familiarized these women with Miss Hockaday's case.
For once your trust in me is not misplaced. I knew better than to discuss another client's business, especially in so sensitive a matter. Do you think the crimes are connected? Sidney Grice prodded the foot scraper with his toe.
All crimes are connected,
he proclaimed unhelpfully,
if only by the fact that they are crimes.
I stepped back to look up, narrowly avoiding a collision with a passing cobbler's handcart.
Make your shoe good as new,
he bellowed in my ear as I skipped clear.
Fix the holes in your soles.
Be quiet,
my guardian snapped.
I ain't done a bit about how you never saw shiny a lever,
the bootmaker grumbled as he trudged by. His lips, I noticed, were stained brown, and I wondered if he sucked his blacking. I craned my neck to admire the house's decorative capitals. It does not look like Miss Bocking will have any trouble paying your fees. Mr. G. slid a shriveled worm out of the way with his cane.
Clarence Bocking, her father, was reputed to have been the 119th richest man in England.
I went up to the door. Where did his wealth come from?
From stealing the design of a safety pencil sharpener and patenting it, whilst the true inventor, his younger sister, was recovering from an accident with her self-tightening corset.
There was a court case about that, was there not? I racked my brains for something that a detective should be doing, but came up with nothing.
Indeed.
My guardian ran a gloved finger down a railing.
But since it was a civil action, I have no record of it. I shall peruse the details before the week has expired.
The door was opened by a neat maid in a rigidly starched hat and gleaming white apron, with a welcoming, Good afternoon. She spoke to us pleasantly. Can I help you?
Mr. Grice and assistant to see Miss Bocking.
Mr. G. thrust his card at her. Please, come in. Miss Bocking is expecting you. We stepped into a rectangular hall, the pale marbled floor inset with an apron of green squares, and the pale cream walls with a faint bamboo pattern, brightening it even in the weak daylight that seeped through the windows to either side of the door.
If you could wait here one moment, she requested, after taking our overcoats and hats.
If we could wait here, what?
Sidney Grice resisted her attempts to relieve him of his cane, and the maid bobbed in confusion.
I'm sure I don't know, sir.
I am partially mollified to learn that you are sure of something, if only your ignorance.
He shooed her off with the back of his hand.
Go.
The maid bobbed.
Yes, sir.
And she scurried away. We watched her go down the hall and turn right. It was a pretty entrance, I thought. Periwinkle wallpaper, and a marble floor veined in a hint of pink, and the stairs had a cheerful rose runner. Sidney Grice swallowed noisily. Assistant, I turned on my guardian. I have a name.
So does your cat, he replied,
and I was about to respond that he actually used hers when a voice came from inside the room.
I will deal with this, thank you, Aelin.
The maid came out and turned back up the hall, and Freddy appeared in a dark blue dress with darker blue trim, and walked straight towards us. Her movements were graceful, and with her slender figure, she could have been a striking woman were it not for her injuries. Her face was as scarred as I remembered, and without her hat, I saw that she had short, sparse, straw-yellow hair.
It is good to see you, March.
She took my hand briefly.
Good afternoon, Mr. Grice. I have read so much about you.
How much is so much?
My guardian stood on tiptoe to peer over her shoulder. A great deal. Freddy looked edgily behind herself, but there was nobody there. The famous detective showed no interest in furthering that conversation, but appeared to have taken an avid one in Freddy Wilde's bosom, bowing until his long, thin nose seemed about to be buried in it. Freddy leaned back uncomfortably, but his crooked finger came up and tapped something metallic.
That is an unusual amulet.
He straightened, and I glimpsed an ornamented silver cylinder inset with a few bright rubies hanging from her neck.
What does it contain?
Perfume.
Then please do not allow the aroma to escape.
Sidney Grice clasped his hands in supplication.
It may make the webs of my toes tingle, and I have little appetite for that experience.
It was my mother's.
Freddy fingered the chain. From Turkey, I believe.
Persia,
he corrected her.
Safavid dynasty from the Herat region. The filigree style is unmistakable to the tutored eye.
Freddy looked impressed. March told me that your powers are quite miraculous. Mr. G examined himself in the ornately gold-framed mirror.
My senses are extraordinarily acute.
He removed a minuscule smut of soot from his nose.
And my intellect without parallel. But I leave miracles to the Bible, shabby conjurers, shabbier politicians, and miracle workers.
Very well. Freddy stepped forward into the weak rays coming through the fanlight. How did I get this face? My guardian surveyed her briefly and expressionlessly.
It is the face with which you were born.
He drew out a red paisley handkerchief.
That it was hideously disfigured by fire is obvious.
Freddy winced at his choice of words and tipped her head back.
Go on.
Sidney Grice shone the lenses of his pince-nez, but did not clip them on.
Not quite so obvious to lesser beings, perhaps, are the twin facts that you were unconscious while the heat wreaked most of its havoc, and that you must have been about 12 years old.
Freddy looked at him suspiciously.
You have prior knowledge?
I have not.
He straightened the cuffs of his coat.
That you were unconscious is witnessed by the conditions of your hands, eyes, and lips.
Freddy touched her cheek.
How so?
Mr. G licked a finger to arrange his eyebrows.
When a conscious person is caught in a fire, they do one or both of two things. They try to beat out the flames, burning the palms of their hands, and, or, they cover their faces, so that the back of their hands takes the brunt of the damage. The skin on your hands is as unblemished as that of your face must once have been. That your eyelids were closed is demonstrated by the degree of damage that they suffered, whilst your eyeballs, bar a wisp of scarring in the left cornea, are relatively unscathed.
Freddy's eyes glistened. Go on, she said unsteadily.
The epidermis was seared off most of your face, including your lips, except for those areas on the lower.
I looked and saw that he was right. Between the scars and raw areas were several straight-edged patches of clear vermilion border, and small areas of undamaged skin for about an eighth of an inch below, the two middle marks being almost rectangular. And so?
Your upper teeth are proclined some 30 to 35 degrees from what is considered aesthetically pleasing by those of a more trivial disposition than mine, and you have a tendency to slip your lower lip behind them. They protected those covered parts from the full effects of the fire. Teeth are remarkably resistant to heat, as witnessed by many a murderer's attempts to incinerate his or her victim's corpse. If you had been awake during the conflagration, your mouth would not have been relaxed. You would have been calling for help, or screaming, with your mouth wide open.
And my age? Freddy asked quietly.
The patch in the left corner is almost twice the width and length of the right.
Mr. G put his handkerchief away.
The left was clearly a permanent tooth, and the right a deciduous. As a rule, the permanent dentition of girls develops before that of boys, especially wealthy girls, which you undoubtedly were from your unfeigned accent. And the permanent canines erupt between the ages of 11 and 13. You were in a transition stage. Hence, I estimated that you were approximately 12 years old.
Freddy touched her left jaw with the tips of her fingers. It was my 13th Christmas, and my parents had lit the candles on the tree. They left them burning. I do not know why. My mother and father were killed, along with Lucy's brother and our two maids. She swallowed. People tell me I was lucky. I took her hand. How cruel life is. Freddy wiped her eyes.
Your ward did not exaggerate your powers, Mr. Grice.
My guardian ran a hand through his thick black hair.
Perhaps I can put them to profitable use now, if you have finished your amble down memory lane.
Freddy gasped, and I rounded on him.
You could teach life a trick or two when it comes to callousness.
But Freddy stopped me. I am sorry to waste your time, Mr. Grice. She blew her nose and composed herself.
Lucy must be wondering what we are up to. I have left her in the fernery. What terrors are contained within that final word?
Mr. G mumbled. We passed through a nice duck-egg blue drawing room into a vast conservatory that had been transformed into a miniature jungle. I had rarely seen such a profusion of ferns. Mossy plants grew out of a tree trunk, which stopped just short of the lofty glass roof. Two of the walls were made of boulders, creating cliffs, some 20 feet or more high, from which projected, and hung, larger plants, and freestanding bushes grew from peat beds round the sides and in the middle of the room.
Green,
Mr. G recoiled. I see you are exercising your detective skills already, a voice said. And we peered between the masses of vegetation to find Lucy Bocking, quite tiny and dressed in dusky pink, in a high-backed cane chair at the far end of the room, her feet on a wicker footstool. Mr. Grice does not like the colour, I told her, and parted some fronds to make my way down a limestone path towards her.
I loathe it.
He followed reluctantly.
It is evocative of meadows and pastoral poetry.
He shook her hand.
Good afternoon, Miss Bocking.
Please, call me Lucy.
Her hair was pinned back by an ivory comb carved into an intricate latticework, but the front still fell into a fringe.
No, he said. I am known as a casual fellow, but I dislike familiarity with my clients.
So I cannot call you Sydney? She teased.
She had a choker around her neck with a cream-coloured button at the front.
Even my mother never called me that.
What did she call you then?
The same as she does now.
He raised a puzzled eyebrow.
Grice.
Lucy's mouth twitched.
So what did she call her husband?
Why, Mr. Grice, of course.
He wiped his hand on a handkerchief, monogrammed mysteriously with the initial Q, and I bent to kiss her cheek.
How are you, Lucy?
I am well, she assured me, though clearly she was not.
Her voice was still hoarse. Her cuts were scabbing and the bruises fractionally fading, but her right eye was still almost closed, and her arms trembled when she held them up to me. Sidney Grice and I sat in two bamboo chairs facing her, he with his satchel on his lap.
Given the unsavoury nature of your case, if I am to believe, as I do occasionally, what Miss Middleton has told me.
He toyed with the strap buckle.
I shall be obliged to say things which you will find embarrassing, and I deeply so.
Mr. G. wrapped the strap loosely around his wrist.
So I shall commence with a medical inquiry.
Was it the light, or had he gone a tint of pink? He pulled the strap tight.
Does your right acetabular femoral joint hurt very much?
My hip.
Lucy half smiled at his circumspection and half frowned in puzzlement.
But how did you know?
Your foot is turned 48 degrees medially, and the only joint capable of rotating axially that far in that direction, without dislocation or fracture, is in your pelvis.
He pulled on the strap, taking his reluctant left hand for a walk.
If it were your knee or ankle, you would be in traction.
How do you know I was not born pigeon-toed?
She challenged, as he loosened his leash.
Those bovine epidermal boots, though in keeping with modern stylistic fads, are not especially new. If you were in the habit of walking in such a manner, the soles would have been more unevenly abraded.
Bravo!
Lucy clapped like a little girl at a magic show.
And in answer to your question, yes, it does. I can hardly walk on it.
Good.
I am glad you think so.
Sidney Grice slipped his hand out of the noose.
Are you literate, Miss Bocking?
What?
Lucy laughed uncertainly.
Yes, of course.
And he thrust a blank postcard at her with a stumpy black pencil.
Then kindly write, neatly, though not in block capitals, for I am not in the mood to look at those today, the names of your solicitor, if you have one, accountant, if you have one, and doctor, of whom you must have at least one.
Lucy took them from him.
Why do you need those details at this stage?
I do not.
Mr. G. laughed mirthlessly.
And I might never, but I have a sick fancy to see their names in your hand.
Lucy took the item silently and began writing. Shall I ring for coffee? Freddy asked from behind us.
Tea,
he instructed. I am not a servant, she muttered, and tugged a rope just inside the sitting room.
What exactly are you?
Sidney Grice challenged as she returned.
A companion, Freddy said quietly. Freddy is my best friend, almost my sister.
Lucy began, but Mr. G. silenced her with a raised hand.
One cannot almost be a sister, he corrected her. Sorority is an absolute relationship between females, which has been created either by mutual genetic parentage or the legal process of adoption. To put it simply enough for you to comprehend, either one is a sister or one is not.
Lucy means that we feel like sisters to each other.
Freddy sought to explain, but my guardian shushed her also.
If I had required one, I should have employed the services of a professional interpreter. But I am hopeful that Miss Bocking will manage to express her thoughts more articulately.
He turned back to Lucy.
Have you finished writing?
Yes.
Then pass the result of your labours to me.
Have you ever heard of the word please?
Lucy held the card out, and he rose to take them back.
I have,
he assured her gravely.
Indeed. Pray resume your exordium.
Lucy clicked her tongue.
Miss Wilde and I lived next door to each other as children. My parents were her godparents, and her parents were mine. We played together, and after the accident...
I have told them all about that, Freddy broke in.
Not all, Mr. G interjected. Merely a synopsis.
Lucy patted her arm.
Freddy came to live with us and has remained ever since, and now there are just the two of us.
She laughed croakily.
And what a fine pair we make. Me crippled and...
Stop, Freddy hissed. Your wounds will heal, and one day you will walk as though nothing has happened.
One wound will never heal.
Lucy struggled to get up on her elbows, and Freddy put an arm under her shoulders.
Until I am avenged of the animal who did this to me.
I take it you use the word animal metaphorically.
Mr. G hauled out his hunter by the chain.
I am not, exempli gratia, expected to search for a tortoise.
Is that a joke? Freddy seemed ready to pounce through the fronds of bracken drooping between them from a terracotta amphora.
You may infer the answer from two pieces of evidence.
My guardian's face had a mysterious aura in the dappled light.
First, my demeanour, and second, the brief extract from my memoirs, which I shall relate immediately.
An umbra fell across his eyes.
I was approached 2,000 days ago by a woman of good repute who gave a lurid and graphic account of being molested by an escaped anaconda. Her credibility was somewhat tarnished, however, by her description of what it did with its hands.
Notwithstanding, or perhaps because of, the grave way Mr. G delivered this information, the three of us burst out laughing.
Oh!
Lucy put her hands protectively over her midriff.
I really should not do that with cracked ribs.
She shifted in pain.
I mean, a man, of course, she croaked. He ruined me for life, Mr. Grice, and I want my revenge.
Vengeance, Sidney Grice ruminated. I am not much interested in facilitating that, but the capture and punishment of criminals is something to which I devote every waking and many a sleeping moment of my life.
His face shone with a zeal that is normally only seen in paintings of visionary saints.
Thank heavens, he cried. I hear the clatter of bone china on a Japanese oak tea trolley, with brass wheels approaching this miserable lair.